Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
On this episode of Damsels in the DMs.
My mission would be is to come and start building films, building stories, and offer the narratives about wonderful women of today, women who are living, breathing, acting. They are successful. They are inspirational. They're not victim stories. Their story is unique, not written for someone else. I'm metaphorically like they live in their lives, right? And I want to bring those.
This message is intended as a reminder that we are not licensed professionals, not psychiatrists or psychologists. If you have a serious problem, please seek professional help. The National Suicide Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255.
There's some damsels in the DM.
Yes, queen.
Tell us what's the vibe. There's some damsels in the DM. Please tell us what's the vibe. DMs, DMs, yeah we see them, yeah we read them. DMs, DMs, we don't need them, we just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
We had the wonderful Irina Meyer on the podcast this week, and she started the production company called Mama Lion Productions. She has a really interesting story. She started off in the tech space and then eventually became interested in entertainment through seeing that the roles representing women were not authentic towards the people that she knew. And her production company has been able to do amazing things. She also won an Emmy in her career. And I mean, I just think it's so inspirational when you get to see these multi-hyphenate women succeeding, and the way that they pave the way for the rest of us coming up, I think is like totally invaluable. So I'm really excited for you
guys,
inspired as we were.
Yeah. And I also, what I thought was really inspirational is her helping, not only helping these women, but I love seeing when people merge their like past careers. So, you know, her past in being a venture fund, whatever, and merging that with her love for film was really cool to see that, because now she has a production company helping out all these women, telling stories that you would never really hear unless you're living these lives.
100%. And she's traveling all over the world to make some of her films. It's like incredibly impressive. And it was so funny because I actually met people who work at her production company at Cannes. And we really hit it off, and they were like, you need to have Irina on the podcast. And I was like, you're absolutely right. We do. So it's nice the way that your connections from film festivals can continue on when you're back in the States. So I'm excited for you guys to hear from her.
Me too. Let's get into it.
All right. Well, hello, Irina. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
And it was amazing because I got connected. It was so funny. I was at a panel at Ken, and I was sitting behind Jackie, who works at Irina's production company. And I heard her talking about California. And I had come to this panel by myself. I didn't know anyone. So I was listening for like any ins or outs into conversations about something I could maybe relate to. And they were talking about their production company based in California. So I jumped in immediately and I was like, oh my gosh, California. I'm from California. I mean, like, you know, probably 40% of Cannes also coming from Los Angeles. But anyway, I'm glad that it led us to you.
Wonderful. I'm so glad it did. Yes, Jackie been very excited when she met you, and she thinks that, and so I do, that you're very courageous, you are trailblazers in your own right. You are strong women who want to bring their your perceptions of the creative world and also integrate other interesting perspective from the women across the board. And I highly respect that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. I want to talk a little bit because I know that your career started in entrepreneurship, and I want to hear about everything, how you originally got into entrepreneurship, where you're from originally, and then how you've started transitioning now into entertainment.
Yeah, well, thank you for this question. It is kind of an interesting journey. I was born in Soviet Union in the suburb of Russia. Not a very happy suburb, not a very rich suburb, not populated with the most responsible adults. So it was a little interesting, but I went to the top university in Moscow, and I studied philosophy, political science. So all around me, there were all kinds of strange things going on, but I was focused on myself, on my education and the family in order to move forward. So fast forward, I am in France studying French literature and French language. And that was very, very fascinating. However, given an opportunity to come to United States, it was not possible not to come and try to experience the American dream, which I did and exposed it completely. I got myself an education in science, got myself Bachelor of Science in Computer Science, started working in the tech world. And in the tech world, I started creating programs, projects, build platforms, and then companies. So that's kind of that's what happened here in California. And I love California for being such a wonderful, fertile ground for me.
So also, I live in Paris right now, so it was really cool to hear you say that you went to France. Have you ever thought about coming to Paris again, like, you know, leaving the States for a little bit to do producing over here and work with French films?
So it is funny that you ask. Recently, definitely, I started thinking about that because French cinema is so incredibly rich. Mm-hmm. And being in Cannes, it just reminds us so much. It's an incredible culture. You know, for this year's Cannes Film Festival, the image that the committee selected, it's Catherine Deneuve in one of the very classic black and white films, and it is perhaps a great reminder for us all how much is still happening in France. Yes, and especially because I met exceptional women producers who work with French cinema or in France. They are from Northern Africa, from Morocco, and another one from Tunisia. And they say that the programs that France developed to co-produce is definitely something that gave them access to the world of filmmaking that otherwise they wouldn't have. And I was just so happy to hear that France was able to open the doors to creative women, even the ones who are not living in France. So yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you take us back to when you transitioned from being a venture capitalist and being in the entrepreneur field, the tech field? I also have a similarity. I used to work in tech as well, and then I transitioned to being an actor. But when did you want to become a producer? Like, what made you want to come into film? And I don't know if you've left the tech world or you're still a part of the tech world, but what made you transition to this field?
Yes, yes. Well, absolutely. It's a multi-million dollar question. So I'm still a little bit involved in the tech world, but majority of my time and effort is right now in production. So it started happening some years back, when about 3-4 years ago, when I was watching in dismay of what happens to the women in our society in the United States, but also in the Western world. And in the beginning, it was just an indignation of a citizen or a viewer, consumer of the events. So we see the bigger barrier to promotions in the corporate world. We're seeing that women founders at the lowest point of getting investments from venture capital world. So this year, for example, it's about 2% of total capital available that goes to women founders who found at least a third of all companies. And that number is exactly the same as it was 17 years ago. And there was a brief blip above, and then it starts going down again. We're seeing the clinics, women's clinics being closed and women being prevented from accessing certain necessities. But then that understanding that something is going suddenly backwards, or there is a perception in media that we're doing so great, but the reality of it is getting worse than when I started working 30 years ago. And that was really started bugging me. Why on screen there is such a poor representation of a modern woman, of a modern successful woman. And I saw the wavelength being consumed by some of the victim stories or the roles for where women are protagonists. It's just the script being written for men. And then they say, well, get the memo. We need to have more women central role. So now it's a woman who is an assassin instead of a man. And then she's in a high heels and a tight dress, running around, shooting people, the role being written for men, okay? So, and this disparity of what we see in media, and it's across social networks, streaming devices, network television, it doesn't quite matter, it contradicts the reality. And I thought that's what we need in the society in order to actually continue our progression towards something fair and with open opportunities and equal, we need to readjust what we're consuming as a content. And I thought my mission would be is to come and start building films, building stories, and offer the narratives about wonderful women of today, women who are living, breathing, acting. They are successful, they are inspirational, they're not victim stories. Their story is unique, not written for someone else. I'm metaphorically, like, they live in their lives, right? And I want to bring those, and they're not horrendous. They are often women of faith, they're family women, they love their kids and their parents and their husbands, and they are super achievers and they learners. And I thought, like, I do not see those. I do not see those images anywhere, but those are my close friends and my close friends from all around the globe. And I thought, I cannot believe that right now there is none of those. So I thought, no, I have to actually do something about it. So that was the motivation.
I love that you say that, because that for me was a lot of the reason that I wanted to go to graduate school for producing as an actor. Because when I was in LA and I was strictly auditioning before I started creating my own content, I would feel so limited by the roles that were written for women. And to me, it's so obvious when a role has been written by a man for a woman. I think I can say this. I gave script notes on something yesterday, and the script, I felt like the women were only there to serve the lead male character, and they had no purpose in the script. Otherwise, they had no conversations about men. They had no conversations outside of talking about men. It would never have passed the Bechdel test, you know? And this is somebody who I think, you know, really highly of in their career, but I also had to say, okay, do I continue to let this slide and not bring it up? Or am I going to ask, like, hello, do you think that these are well thought out, built out women? Are these representative of people you know? And I decided to give the note because I said, you know, why do I go to school for producing? Why do I think I want to make a change in the entertainment industry if you don't even start at the little steps, you know? Yeah. So I want to talk about why Mama Lion Productions specifically, and I know definitely female driven content, but can you talk about, like, what are the projects exactly that you guys are looking to take on right now, or, you know, brief about some in the works, whatever you can say.
Of course, with great pleasure. So Mama Lion, I wanted to, in the name, to convey the meaning of the company. And it is about a strong woman who did not need to lose her femininity, her intuition, her love, her faith, her family in order to become successful, this cold-hearted executor, right? So this is a woman who is a lion, but who is a mama lion. She is offering space. She's not taking space. She's offering the space full of positivity, good energy, support to others, and also non-exclusive female club. I am very happy to work with men who are understanding the message, who can build the authentic images of the woman on screen. But that was the very important part, but also the strength and resilience of those of our protagonists. So the stories that we are telling are, for example, one of them, we're developing a feature film, which is called Save My Name. And it is about my dear friend, former National Assemblywoman of Guatemala, Maria Eugenia Tabush. And she is, prior to being National Assemblywoman, she is an iconic businesswoman trailblazer in Central America. She developed her phenomenal career and personality in the environment which were less than ideal. And in the same time, she is, and she had many issues in her life, where in dealing with a very much man-dominated Latin world and in a country that was emerging from a civil war, so where everything would be stacked against her, and she navigated it without raising her voice, without this confrontation, without playing people one against the other, but through getting respect of the business community, through getting people on board with her project. She became a head of a multinational, and when she resigned, she decided to give back and go in the political class, which is very, very difficult in Guatemala. There is many pulls and pushes. It's a democratic society, but it's very difficult ones. And at a great detriment to the personal, financial, and others, she served her people. And you meet her right now. She's about my age. She's happy. She's positive. She knows so many things, so many people around the world. So that's as one of our stories. And Save My Name comes from the fact that she, and not her older brother, was saving the family business from bankruptcy. And it was a young woman who stepped up in big shoes and was taking care of the family name. So that's one of our projects. We're very deeply invested in it.
Your transition, like, how did you even know how to become a producer? For anyone who's like looking to become a producer, what were the first things that you did when you realized, okay, I need to be in this industry, I need to create a platform for people to be able to, you know, have their projects out there? What were some of the first things that you did to, in order to create Mama Lion?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I did not have any connections. If indeed, you're absolutely right. If I would be already working on production with some director, or as being an associate producer or doing something for some other studio, I'll have the all the necessary, at least the how to do things. Like, that's what you do. That's the companies to use. That's how you set things up. For me, it was from scratch. So I started by engaging other people around me, around my idea. And I would share it with the people I liked, respected, from just generally from my history of living and working and interacting with people in business world and venture world and tech world and in the creative world. And in the beginning, references were like really far away or not relevant. But little by little, I start pulling the little threads of the people who would be engaged with something. And instead of getting into the perfect combination of the collaborators, I started working on the project. I put a project and I said, that's the one I want to develop. I'm working on that. So I had an idea to do something about a poet, an Indian American poet here. So I'm just going to do that. And I started creating the team around me. And I was like, okay, let's do that. And that was about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. And at the beginning, those people, those teams will come and they will fall apart because they would be lacking particulars and knowledge, experience, dedication. But as I would be the one person that continues to drive in those things and keep looking for collaborators, and I start engaging like really cool people, and I start figuring out what each of them can bring to me different for my goal. So, for example, one was really good at setting up just the generally everything needed for a corporation to run, like between the benefits and this and this and this and expenses and some other things. Like, I can do that super well. And then going through entertainment attorneys, I can build for a production company like that. No, old school, don't like that. I can build for you the company like that. Way too complicated, way too long, does not work for me. And then I went actually to something that I knew is like to build a new venture, and I created the production company as a startup. I issued 10 million shares. I seed invested in it myself. I put in people who would move my project forward. And whenever it would be really gelling, we will progress. And then I start hiring people. And when we pick more projects, and here I go. So that's as basically how I've done everything I've done, by doing.
I'm so happy that you integrated both your worlds, and that's the approach that you took, because that's a very unique story and a very unique way to become a producer and have your own production company.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, also as I was building it and I started to work on this initial film project, I realized that what I wanted is not necessarily for myself to have this success story as we often look for, where your numbers go from the low left corner to the upper right in the quickest possible time. I realized that was not my aspiration. My aspiration was not to lose money, but to bring with me as many co-producers, collaborators, other studios together, so we will be growing together, and to give some of my ideas and opportunities to other people who are like-minded individual. And that's what I started focusing on, finding connections with other small studios. And I wanted the Mama Lion to be not just a place for, like a space for me, for my project. I wanted to be a doorway for other similar projects if they're not finding the right recipients in the studios, in the Netflixes, in other places. And I thought, let me try to see how those projects, I can push them forward. Okay. Also focusing on what is my strength versus maybe the strengths of people who've been in creative world for 20 or 30 years.
So Irina, we would be remiss if we didn't ask you about your Emmy winning project. Can you please talk about that and how it felt to be an Emmy winner?
Oh my goodness. Thank you. That was a Very interesting story, totally unexpected, never in a million years. So I was working as a project manager at ABC Television in Burbank. And when I was hired, it was to manage the digital media for the primetime lineup of ABC. So the shows from 8 to 10 Monday for Thursday, and making sure that everything is ready to go and being organized. And at the time I was hired, it was told that there is a possibility within department to work on Oscar's project. And I was like, that's what I wanted to do. So I started working. And when Oscar is a seasonal project, it's a few months, it's about 5 months a year. So as you start to prepare in November, and it's sometimes end of February, usually, like that's the duration. And then people do other things. So when the time comes for the starting to work on Oscars, I'm like, I want to do it. My manager is like, no, I like doing whatever you're doing. Like, no, I like really want to do that. You already have a job. And then I say, well, is there any way that I still will be the main person on Oscars? She's like, fine, but then you're still doing what you're doing already. And then you're doing Oscars. I'm like, deal, I take it. I want it, please. So I picked the project and this one, and I was doing for like 5 months a year. I would do like the double job, but I loved being setting things up at then Kodak Theater, now Dolby, work with dozens, and sometimes it was 3 dozen, the contractor company, somebody bring like setting up the wire, somebody else bringing the video van in front, somebody third is doing the little carousels with video editing, and then they would be the people on the red carpet, and that it's insane, huge world, and all kinds of department within ABC, and even we were under umbrella, or still are, ABC and the Disney, even to augment our capacity during the event to the larger infrastructure groups. I loved it. So, but I was there because I wanted really to see this beautiful thing coming together. And then everything went well. In 2010, we delivered the product that the ABC was not able to do in the 7 previous years combined. And we received this incredible recognition. And I have to credit Albert Chang, who was an executive vice president at ABC, big, big boss, and who like handwritten my name into the list of people who would be representing, like going and receiving an award and nomination and everything. And I'm just incredibly grateful for this recognition. And I was pretty stunned. I thought it was a mistake. I went around and I said, like, I'm here, are you sure? I don't have a title of a producer, or like, no, that's you. That's you. Congratulations. Okay.
But that's, we have to not do that as women, right? Like, no, you earned that. You earned that title. And what a wonderful experience to have. So now with the strikes happening, what has Mama Lion been doing? What can you guys still work on? Can you tell us about how the strikes affect production companies?
So yes, at large, there is a very significant effect because it's very, very disruptive for the industry. There are more things that are preventing work than even meets the eye. So there is a repercussions that's going kind of all the way through. For example, all the entities that's been set by production companies to work with the guild representatives were to set up the signatory companies and add the guild as a signatory. And with the strike, all the signatory is being invalidated. Basically, they say like it's as if they don't exist. So it's invalidates so much of the previous work as well. So that is a little concerning. And I think we're going to see the negative results in 2 to 3 years' time in the content, because right now it's a dry period. specifically for Mama Lion, we are not as affected as perhaps others, because we choose, we are very, very particular about our purpose and our brand. Like the content, very important. How successful, what pre-sales are, much less important for us. We do only what is on brand. And for that, early on, we decided to hire in-house writers to develop our product pitches. And to on some of the projects to go deeper and write them, and the others to write the entire script, and on some others, after writing the script, write a biography or book associated with it. If we tell the story of a woman who doesn't have a biography, and we will also publish it. So we're from the very beginning, we're very focused on bringing in-house writers. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the best thing that the other production companies can do right now is to perhaps offer that opportunity to unemployed writers. But it depends on everybody's situation and P&L or a writer's preferences. But at least that is our way of approaching it. And I'm glad that's the way we went way before the strike started.
So with you having an in-house team, can you still accept pitches from outside people or companies, or all your projects get generated in-house?
So we have, it depends. We have some projects which are from outside, but we are from day one decided to work with international studios. So we welcomed people from Guatemala Productions to work with us. And we reached out to the French producer, French Moroccan, and to Israeli, and to a Saudi woman producer to look and develop some of the content with us. So we are much broader from day one than just the United States. And as far as the production company, we can hear pitches. So we are not, there would be no consequences for us, but we always ask ahead of time, what will it represent for you? What does it mean for you? We want to be very sensitive. If there are certain situation for this person to say no, like I left it, I do not know, I'm fine. And so we'll follow up on it once again. And then, okay. Or there are people who are not associated with it, so those speeches. Or some will say, can you just give it a look, maybe for the later, whenever the time will be better. And so we look at that. But right now, for the small studio as we are, we're busy to 100%. So there is not one more that I think we can accept at this time. So as it will be the new stage of growth and accepting new projects, I think then we might feel it a little more. But I think we'll continue focusing on our own in-house writing team.
So with that, are you basically unaffected by, well, not completely unaffected, but it's business as usual with the strike? So it's like a separate entity that's happening. So you can continue.
We are not affected at all. None of our projects had to stop or relationship put on pause. They were like four or five projects pitched to us that we liked, but we did not pursue them on the merit of the, and they were coming from people from WGA, but we passed on them by other reasons than the strike before it started. So I can't even say that even that us walking out from there was a result of it, because it was based on different, either budgetary or some other concerns about the content.
So with you working with international clients as well, are you not part of the union? I'm assuming I'm not part of any union, right?
Yeah. No, okay, so no. We're a startup. We're a venture in production. So right. Yeah, would no, we're no unions.
Would you be working primarily with like non-union actors?
That is a great question. There is, that's, we will need to see how it goes. I think right now it is, we're in a good shape. And we, as a brand, we like to give opportunities to others. And opportunities is often will be to the people who are not fully established yet and not necessarily part of any organization with that gives constraints. And if we're filming a story, Guatemalan story, we will be looking for actresses from Central and actors from Central America and Mexico, where there is a very robust film industry, because we want to do that. And when we will be working with, let's say, Saudi production telling a story of a phenomenal Saudi woman, then we will be relying on the casting from the Arabian Peninsula as far as actors are concerned. And director, definitely woman Saudi director, yes, we're in love with her. So that will be the case. I think what helps us is indeed our mission. On one end, mission seems very constrained, because like, no, we will not do sci-fi, we do not do horror, we do not do this, we do not do that. But at the same time, we're very global, and we're as being focused on the message, we are strong with our in-house writing. So it's kind of, I can't say that I was such a brilliant mastermind to create it this way. It is more of a happy turns of events, but
no, it was you. Take credit.
I know, as a woman, it's very hard.
You're doing it again.
Lauren just said it, just genius. Like how I was fighting. No, it's not me for Amy. Like, no, why would you say it? Yeah. No man will ever say, what do you mean, me? I worked so hard doing all of that. Of course it is me. I'm like, no, are you sure? Yeah. It's not accurate. I'm like, and here, like, yes, I made all of those decisions, but not affected by it. Not because I'm any smart. Happened. Yeah, I know.
But we're women supporting women. That's why we have to call it out.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
But I also, just for our listeners so they know, I think what Irina is talking about, if you're not filming in the US right now, then you're not really susceptible to union guidelines, because the unions are really just American unions. There are other unions other places, but WGA, SAG, PGA, those are all US. So for the actors that are listening, just to be clear, under the SAG strike agreement, independent projects do not fall under that. So independent projects will still be able to go even during the strike. It's really just the ones that are by the networks that will be paused. And I know this because I'm allowed to work in July. I just had a call with SAG confirming this. So I know that independent projects are still allowed to work. So that is confirmed. But Irina, for you now in your career, you've won an Emmy, you started Mama Lion Productions, you're working on projects that, you know, people would absolutely kill to be part of. What for you is the most fulfilling part of your career?
I think is to tell the truth, being authentic. It's very, very difficult, because when you start getting a little bit of traction, people start worrying a lot about, I'm going to mess it up. What do I need to do now? I need to modify something. I need to blend in. I need to deliver what the other is expecting of me. And that's where everything breaks. I think being true to the mission and being true to the story and reevaluate, keep asking questions and not shy away and do not being like washed with the rest of the well-intentioned projects who were a little shy of maintaining their brand and their positioning. I think that is would be very difficult. For me, is authenticity is important. I don't want to sugarcoat things, but in the same time, I do not want to focus on the dark, on the dirt, on the pain that was given to people. I want to show how, given the unfair cards being played, how do you deal with it? How do you walk through it without losing your integrity and identity? And I think that is the most important thing for me. When I lose this authentic voice, and if I'm washed ashore, I deserve to be washed ashore.
Gosh, should we get into our
time?
Yeah.
Minds. So, Irina, because you are such a successful, powerful, and I'm owning it to you, you're a powerful, successful, independent woman making your own path happen, which is really cool for you to, you know, come from venture and into now the entertainment. I can't even imagine how busy you are and what your schedule is like just being you. Do you have any like healthy habits that you swear by or a morning routine that keeps you being able to pursue this career?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Morning is the most important part because when morning starts badly, it's hard to pick it up after. So I like to have a routine. So getting up at the same hour every day, which is 6:45, and give myself the first 15 minutes to do nothing at all, to think about my day. I do not put immediately meditation in my ears or look at this email or what popped up or what's on my routine for the day. Nor do I scroll for social media. It is just me 15 minutes thinking, how do I feel the day is going to be like? And setting up an intention for the day. And I do not set an intention in tasks I want to achieve during the day. I set an intention, how do I want to feel when I go to bed, when I'm back in the same place at night, and I put away the book, and before I close my eyes, what do I want to feel? And I want to feel satisfied. Okay. And I want to have a satisfaction of a day well-lived, productive, and whatever way it can be. And allowing myself to, you know, like body, mind, all kinds of receptors and sensors in us. It's a very complicated machine. And there is a lots of AI in us, you know, like we can, many parts and circuits can organize themselves just fine without an immediate direction to do something. And I kind of let my entire system evolve and just do things that's supposed to be done, because my goal before I fall asleep, I need to feel that I had a productive day. Whether I was with my laptop all day long, typing away, or I took a book and I went to the park and I read for 4 hours, but then I came back and I made the decisions that were really impactful, serious, and courageous. And that was a day well lived. So I set it on an emotional level. I think I'm just embracing my female intuition and thinking like, yeah, I value you. So that is my thing.
I love that. So our next question, this is typically a DM, but up to you whether you want to tell us a story or a DM that you've received. But we always ask, what is the funniest, wildest, most intriguing, or inspirational either story from your career or DM you've received? Dealer's choice.
So let's see. When I was working on the Oscars project back then, the one part, so ABC Television has an agreement that's regularly get renewed with Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, with the Oscars Academy. And then on the day of the nominations, it's a very, very important day. It's usually sometimes in January, is when there is announcement early morning, at least at the time when I was working there, was around 5 something in the morning, because it would be 8 something on the East Coast. And since we have this ongoing relationship, they could put our web developers, engineering team, for one night to work at the premises of the Academy. But they are completely sequestered. They have no idea what is going on. They're only about engineering. Basically, whenever the announcement is done, we just want the clean, beautiful publishing on different web pages, etc. But no hints about, no early nothing. And it was very, very, very important. So I have about 15 people in the basement of the academies with their computers, getting ready to publish whatever they will be told to publish in the early morning. And in the middle of the night, it's around 1:30 or 2 in the morning, something goes terribly wrong with our connectivity or bandwidth, or something is not connecting from this basement. And like, there is no way. So I get all those calls, and but they are sequestered. None of them, not even our director of IT, has a phone in there. We just receiving a distress signals from them, but we no way can communicate anything to them, because that's how the rules are. So the solution that I found as I was figuring out how to deal, and we just needed to give them a tech hack how to fix the thing. And so the solution was, I called the place who connected to the actual building, to the security of the building. And the man with a talkie-walkie was there and having the phone of somebody from the academy there, making sure that there is no crypto message being sent to them. And on the other side would be staying our director of IT, and everything I say will go through the security person, will be said to the person from the Oscars, and then receiving okay, the word will be passed to him. And so I would have to narrate exactly the procedures of how they need to, what they need to do in order to have access to a cluster of some other computers in there. So the security guard in there was not amused whatsoever. But that's how it happened, in the middle of the night, discussing the wires. I did not expect whatsoever. I was more worried about how it's published, where it goes, where it is. Well, that did happen. So we never know in the media world what kind of strange obstacle we will need to jump over suddenly in the middle of the night.
And this is why you deserved that Emmy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the nations were very important. So it had to happen. If other people didn't know what to do, I'm like, okay, like, there must be security guard then. Let's figure it out. We're gonna do it. That's okay. Don't panic.
I think that that's true, that sometimes with problems, it's more about, like, rather than asking everyone, like, how do I fix this? But okay, we're just going to find a solution. Let me figure it out.
There is a guide with the walkie-talkie. Yeah, I can talk to him. He can talk to Brian. Oh, that's okay. Let's figure it out. And then, but what if they say, I can't do it? What if I say something wrong? Okay, here is a president. He's like, okay, here exactly. Can we do that now? 15 people in there. So yeah, that did happen. So it went on. Everything was perfect. We were exactly on time, and everything was beautiful. There were no breach of security. Never asked to give anybody's cell phone. There was just that, and it looked like just ABC have their very well organized, have their stuff together, and just ready to go at 5 in the morning and publish everything. So yeah.
So Irina, I want to get to the DM of the week question, and that asks, has there ever been a moment where you wanted to give up on your career, and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, so that is indeed, that is harsh. That is the harsh realities of the film production, because there are the obstacles that we are facing, like, really significant. And walking the tightrope, sometimes it's really frustrating. The problem that I had is when I started, and I would be very open to bring other people into my project and bring in empowering, sharing, offering resources. It is when somebody on your team starts to panic and become a force that is very destructive. And that is very difficult because I guess I'm much more trained how to deal with the difficulties from the outside. But I guess it's very hard for me to expect something negative coming from the people from around you. And that is a very human type of situation. And that's the stuff that I'm struggling with. And you feel like if you're just generous, if you just open, if you communicate every day, you empower, you respect, it just feels so illogical. It just feels so strange that there would be this active opposition coming within. And I have a hard time seeing this coming. So there is something very naive and idealistic in me. I'm working on it. So yeah, that's like one of the early ones like that. That was really hard for me. I thought, who am I to inspire months tens of thousands or millions of people if I spend so much time and I trust the people around me and then I do not see that one of them was totally on the same page somewhere else. So that was difficult. And overcoming it is through discussion, understanding where did they come from and how does it conflict with expectations within, and part in the best possible terms, keeping the door open and reinforce the company with even more dedicated people. And to be more open to them, more generous to them, more welcoming than before. That is the solution. Because one solution is now I need to guard against newcomers. That says that is not a good thing. No, more of that. Because you understand that sometimes there is some other elements in people's life that's made them act in a certain way. It's not because of you. It's not because of this organization. Something totally else. And it's hard to look at it this way, but it's the part of the human science, I guess.
Well, Irina, that was beautiful. And I think that is the perfect way for us to close out. Thank you so much for being here. Can you please let us know where our listeners can stay up to date on what you're working on and everything that Mama Lion has coming?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Fantastic conversation. Our website is mamalionproductions.com. We're also on Instagram, Mama Lion Productions. You will see our posts from our Cannes experience there, among other things. So yes, please get in touch with us on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on contact us on our website. We read every single thing. We respond to all of our calls and we love our community.
Perfect. Love that. Well, thank you so much, Irina. It's been such a blast to talk to you.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
Until you subscribe and rate and review to our podcast, we will be loving you forever. So please rate, review, subscribe, DM us, and all the good things.
And please also send us if there's anybody who you think would be an amazing fit to come on the podcast. We're always looking for new guests. So let us know who you'd like to hear from or what you'd like to hear from. If you need a special about the strike, just to understand it, let us know. If you need somebody to give you tips and tricks and things to do this summer, let us know. We are here. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
Until next time.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
Bye.
DMs, DMs. Yeah, we see them. Yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs. We don't need them. We just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.